This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
The Revolution with Warren McCartney is sponsored by J.S. Johnson, Burger King, Commonwealth Bank, Wendy's, Ron's Electric Motors, Scotiabank, CG Atlantic, Digital Transformation Unit, and Bahamas Check Services.
And welcome to The Revolution here on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. My name is Juan McCartney. It's so good to have you with us. I am quite aware of the issues that are surrounding current affairs in this country, and I've heard the discussions on various shows today about them, and people are very passionate about it, and I'm sure some people... Well, some people have told me they're waiting to hear my take on it. But we're not doing that today. So last week and earlier this week, I told you we were going to try to figure some things out. So let me first say, let's center ourselves. I'm not going to talk about chakras. I don't want the pitchfork mob to come root me out of the studio and burn me at the stake. But let's center ourselves. Let's try to... cleanse our minds from the hubbub of what's going on around us and try to understand better some other things about us, okay? We did a show on culture, who we are, why we are, where we are earlier this week, and it led into some avenues that, you know, didn't want to really get into, but it's fine. That happens. Conversations are often fluid. The reason I'm trying to do more of this and talk about these issues and research and talk about society in the Bahamas is because if all we talk about is how angry we are about what's going on around us, we will not develop a deeper understanding of ourselves and why perhaps the things that are going on around us that make us unhappy are occurring and what the deeper issues are surrounding them. All right. In other words, we won't grow. Now, if you're living and you're not growing intellectually, spiritually, emotionally, financially, I'm not certain what's the point. So we're going to try to grow our consciousness, expand our understanding of ourselves as much as we can possible. And we're going to do more politics. We're going to do current affairs, certainly, on a frequent basis, but we need to understand some things about ourselves, or at least I need us to understand some things about ourselves. So we talked about culture, who we are, where we are, why we are. I explained during that show that you can't really separate us from the things that we say we're not. We say we're not American, and I'm going to go through some of why as well. This says, this show is live today, all right? It is Thursday, October 21st. You may hear this show at another point where it's not live, but today it is live. And I'm very serious that I'm not going to go over and over and over current affairs every day. Because as I said, we're not going to grow. And I can't be, and what happens when you're in a relationship and one of you is growing, but the other is not, what happens? Somebody tends to leave the relationship, right? So I can't be in a relationship where I can't grow. So if we can't grow together, I'll find something else to do. I need the money, but I can find something to do. So again, you may hear the show again, but today is live. All right? October 21st, 2021. What I want to go through today is why we see some of the racial and even economic issues today in the Bahamas. Because a lot of people don't understand that it's not by mistake. And this won't fully explain everything from where we came from to where we are, but it will help you understand a lot better. Okay? What I'm going to read from you is a document written by Sean McQueenie, and we're going to go through it. It's a rather voluminous document, but we'll try to unpack as much as we can. And he writes, you know, quite clearly and rather eloquently, and so there's no need for me to dig too deeply into a lot of explanation of what he's saying, because he explains it incredibly well. Sean McQueenie might be the smartest person in the Bahamas. Quite possibly is. So this is called Not Far From the Madding Crowd. The Bahamian reaction to the revolutionary upheaval in Haiti and the intensification of racial control. I get a lot of, and from some of the white listeners too, not a lot, but many other white listeners understand, but I get quite a bit of, well, why are we talking about race? We can't talk about Bahamian society and not talk about race. It is impossible. A lot of people want to forget what has happened in the past that informs today, but it's not humanly possible to honestly have an intellectual discussion about Bahamian society without talking about race, as it is not humanly possible to have an honest discussion about Bahamian society without talking about religion. There's no moving away from race. But when we understand better why some of the constructs we see today have come about, then we're much more well-equipped to fix it. This was published in about 2000 in the Journal of Haitian Studies and the Bahamian Historical Society Journal. And I'll just read from it for you so you can understand. All right? The piece begins by saying this. With the arrival of the Loyalists in the 1780s, their slaves and free colored retainers in tow, Bahamian society was dramatically altered. Numbering in the thousands, they tripled the population in virtually a twinkling of an eye, from a mere 2,000 or so to nearly 6,000 between 1783 and 1789. It was the single most sweeping demographic change in the whole of Bahamian history. More profoundly, the arrival of the Loyalists sparked the emergence of what was to become, in many respects, an entirely new country. We'll stick a pin. Why'd the Loyalists come here? The Loyalists were loyal to the King of England. They lived in the Americas. After the American Revolutionary War, which I believe ended in 1776, if I remember correctly, the Loyalists packed up their slaves, all right, particularly those from the East Coast, and came to the Bahamas. Some of them went other places, but quite a number of them went to the Bahamas. All right? Combining intellectual vigor, cultural arrogance, and a ruthless determination to have things their own way, the ascendant merchant planter faction of the Loyalists, the aristocratic element, would rip through successive governors while making quick work of the, quote, old inhabitants, ousting them from their seats in the assembly, putting them under their thumb in the mercantile economy, and generally relegating them to the socially inferior status the Loyalists thought befitted these very poor and ignorant whites, whom they sneeringly dubbed kunks and so affected to despise. Okay? So, the white Loyalists came not only with slaves, but they also disenfranchised the whites who were here before them. They didn't view them as truly white people. The term Kunky Joe, that's where it comes from. So you may hear a white person say, you know, that's a slur. It does indeed come from a place of derision. I like to think that you can now own it and say, yeah, we're not those guys. We're different. And we're Kunky Joes. You don't have to, but I know a lot of you who do. By the dawn of the 19th century, the Loyalists had emerged triumphant from their early struggles, although a great many of them bankrupted by the failure of agrarian enterprise, had by this time moved away with others soon to follow. Okay, agrarian enterprise would be agriculture. All right, they were trying to have agriculture and they found that it wasn't the best place to do it, and so a lot of them went bankrupt. Those who stayed could now lay claim to the heights of the mercantile economy, the professions, and most important of all, the assembly. The Bahamas was now theirs for the shaping. Internally fissured though the white community was, loyalists versus loyalists, or old inhabitants against the whole lot of the pushy new refugees, as the old inhabitants described the loyalists, there was much to unite white Bahamians on what would emerge in the closing years of the 18th century as a single most pressing worry of all. Namely, that in the wake of the loyalist influx, whites were now outnumbered nearly 5-1. A menacing statistic writ large against the backdrop of the calamitous events then unfolding in the colony's closest neighbor to the south. When the slaves of Saint-Domingue rose up in 1791 on a scale wholly without precedent, slave owners everywhere trembled in fear that insurrectionism of similarly apocalyptic tendency might prove contagious. Perhaps nowhere was this more keenly felt than in the Bahamas itself. For one, the sheer closeness of the madding crowd exacerbated the sense of terror. Inagua, though sparsely inhabited at the time, was little more than 60 miles distant, while the Caicos Islands, then a part of the Bahamas, were not much farther away. But it was not close proximity alone that accounted for the dreadful foreboding among white Bahamians. White royalists were pouring into the Bahamas in incredible numbers from Saint-Domingue, bearing horrific tales of how Le Cap, the Paris of the Antilles, as it was called, had been put to the torch, of how that once beautiful and populous city had been sacked by insurgent slaves unshackled from all restraint, and of how men, women, and children had been made to endure unspeakable atrocities, impaled on spikes, set afire, boiled alive, macheted, garroted, or drowned by the dozens. As if that were not horror enough, the white royalists of Saint-Domingue were not arriving in the Bahamas alone. Considerable number of Negroes, mulattoes, musties, and other people of suspect tendency, some of them slaves or family retainers to the white emigres, had joined the influx as well. Let's pause there. Some of you may not be familiar with some of those words. I am certain all of you are familiar with the word Negro. Some of you may not be familiar with the word mulatto, musty. Let me explain something for you here and why I say you can't not talk about race, all right? Someone's saying Saint-Dominique. No, Saint-Domingue was what they called, it is now called the Republic of Haiti. It was a French colony. Some of you may not understand these terms, so I'm going to explain to you how the whites of the time characterized people by color. So back before, I would say, the 20th century, whiteness was considered as close to divinity and purity as you could get. If you were white, then you were at the apex of the social ladder in terms of not being discriminated against. There were differences, of course, when America was becoming America, and they had different immigrants who they didn't first consider really white, but they then blended them into the white status. But white was considered as good as you can get. All right? The word quadroon was borrowed from the Spanish. I'm sorry, let me start with mulatto. The word mulatto, Negro, okay, was a full-blooded African. All right? As Negro. Negro was at the opposite end of the spectrum of white. White at the top, Negro at the bottom. If you were half white and half black, you were often considered mulatto. And if a mulatto married a mulatto, then they too were often considered to remain a mulatto. If you were one quarter of you had African blood, for instance, one biracial parent and one white parent, all right, or one African grandparent and three Caucasian grandparents, you were considered a quadroon. If you were 1/8 African ancestry, so one biracial grandparent and one African great-grandparent and seven Caucasian great-grandparents, right? You were an octoroon, all right? This thing is very serious, okay? Musty was also used to refer to a person with 1/8 African ancestry. Okay? They had other names too. Sambo, Quintroon, Hexadecaroon, right? Race is, aside from money, race itself defines society. That's where we were. So it says the Revolutionary War ended in 1784. Okay, you may be correct. Maybe it started in 1776. I can't remember at the time. So the white royalists of Saint-Domingue were bringing with them Negroes, mulattoes, musties, some slaves, some family retainers. And this frightened the white loyalists to death. McQueenie wrote, "The seed of rebellion, however perilously close it may have been before, had now come to rest directly on Bahamian soil, or so it was widely feared. Even prior to the onset of the rebellion, however, white concerns that Bahamian society might be in need of stricter racial regimentation had been on the rise. With the loyalist influx, the non-white population had become disproportionately large. The new Negro communities were in need of closer policing. In 1788, for example, the grand jury of the town of Nassau had expressed outrage and alarm over the settlement of free Negroes behind Government House, describing it as an enormous nuisance and a particular menace to white slave owners who ventured there in search of runaway slaves. Elaborating upon this complaint, Attorney General William Wiley had explained at the time that a considerable village has been built by freed and runaway Negroes behind Government House, and no white person dares make his appearance within it but at the risk of his life. Many have been assaulted and nearly destroyed there." You do know what area they're talking about, right? This is the over-the-hill area that they're talking about. The Blue Hills area, lying farther south, was thought to harbor runaway slaves in even larger numbers. What these delinquents might one day do was causing considerable worry. Not until the eruptions in what's now Haiti, however, would such anxieties find expression in an architecture of repressive control infinitely more elaborate than the old inhabitants had ever been able to conceive in matters of touching the racial divide. The Loyalists have frequently been blamed for the emergence of race as the dominant motif of the Bahamian social order, the argument being that but for their imported prejudices and their zealous determination to refashion the Bahamas on the more precisely drawn racial lines to which they had become accustomed in the American colonies, race relations might have taken a different and more mutually beneficent turn. True enough, though that may be, it is a simplification that obscures a larger truth, namely, that the political ascendancy of the Loyalists in the Bahamas just happened to coincide with the revolutionary upheaval of Saint-Domingue, and that it was the transfiguring effect of the latter on Bahamian white consciousness far more than any imported Loyalist prejudices, which explains the emergence of race as the single most defining dynamic of the social order at the end of the 18th century. The replicating possibilities filled white colonists everywhere with dread. True, the revolution may have encapsulated a combination of uniquely explosive elements. It was, after all, an infinitely more complex society, with a hugely disproportionate and largely non-creolized slave population, which had long been brutalized to a degree without parallel in the colonies. It had a mulatto caste far more economically advanced and politically assertive than any of its counterparts in British slave society. Indeed, the mulattoes had started all the troubles with an armed revolt in 1790. And it also had a white community, irreparably divided both by class and divergent loyalties to the forces of revolution and counter-revolution, entwined in violent conflict on the other side of the Atlantic. Indeed, but for the furiously violent trajectory of the French Revolution, it is doubtful that even with all its uniquely combustible elements, Saint-Domingue would ever have gone down the path that it did. As it was, however, all the many disparate human elements had come together to reenact, if only half consciously and upon a smaller stage, the bloody drama taking place in France. In Knight's words, the Haitian Revolution had become the inadvertent stepchild of the French Revolution. We gotta take a break, and we'll be back to talk some more about this.
MyGateway is the centralized, safe, secure way to access and pay for government services online. Go to mygateway.gov.bs and log in to request a police character certificate, renew your passport or driver's license, and more. Receive emails confirming requests and alerts when documents are ready. You must have a valid, government-issued ID in order to collect documents. MyGateway is fast, easy, and convenient. Go to mygateway.gov.bs and register today.
Bahamas Check Services Limited has been printing checks, business forms, and deposit books in the Bahamas for over 30 years. We are highly specialized in creating custom forms to suit any and all your business needs. If you need continuous forms, continuous invoices, invoice books, or purchase orders, we can provide them for you. Call 677-8720 or email checks@coralwave.com.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Revolutionary on Guardian Radio. I'm Juan McCartney, so good to have you with us. I saw some people were trying to call. We can call in the second hour and chop it down. There's a lot of this to get through, but, you know, we don't have to get through all of it today. So, again, the French Revolution and the confusion that costs and the complexities of race and class in society in what is now Haiti led to a revolution there, which led to a great deal of panic in the Bahamas that further stratified racial division in the country. Now, what I want to go through here, what I want to get to here, is that these aren't concepts that are just put out there in terms of we think we're better than you, X, Y, Z. These were enshrined in law. And we'll get to that. I want you to understand about why we are where we are. Though the revolution to the south was perhaps a special case, it was hardly thought to be so at the time, and perhaps with good reason, having regard to the wave of slave uprisings that swept, albeit less impressively, through the slave colonies of the Caribbean, all in what was perceived at the time as conscious mimicry of the upheavals. In the 1795 to 1798 period alone, British, French, Spanish, and Dutch colonies, as diverse as Jamaica, the Guianas, Dominica, St. Lucia, St. Vincent, Grenada, Martinique, Guadeloupe, Colombia, Venezuela, Suriname, and, as we shall presently see, the Bahamas, all experienced real or threatened slave revolts, free colored uprisings, or maroon wars in one form or another. Colonial whites were therefore taking no chances. Any confidence that blacks and people of color, whether slave or free, could be relied upon to remain subservient and keep the peace was now gone forever. Whites would now see it as imperative that the policing of the slave and free colored sectors be stepped up, the coercive controls be more systematically applied, and that the white grip on the levers of privilege and empowerment be reinforced. It was against such a backdrop, then, that the politically ascendant loyalists would move with vigor to fortify Bahamian society against the enemy within and without. The latter would come first through a series of measures designed to inoculate the Bahamas against the contagion of Haitian rebellion. In 1793, the Bahamian Assembly would level draconian taxes on Haitian slaves and free people of color, enforceable on pain of deportation, citing the considerable number of Negroes, mulattoes, mustees, and other people of color who had lately been captured by privateers and brought into New Providence, where they had either been sold as slaves or being free or pretending to be free had remained at large. The legislature would express itself determined to bring all such immigrants under particular restrictions, and specific taxations. Governor Dunmore, you hear a lot about Lord Dunmore, himself a loyalist, from Virginia, I believe, would soon add an immigration edict of his own. He said, "I have issued a proclamation for restricting the admission of French mulattoes and free Negroes in these islands. Indeed, such as have been brought here in vessels captured by our privateers of that description have been confined on board the prison vessels of the harbor." Stepping up the pressure, the assembly would soon declare the importation of slaves from what was then Haiti, illegal. Moreover, free persons of color from there already living in the Bahamas will be given a 2-month amnesty to clear out, after which they'd be subject to immediate arrest and deportation at their own expense. Leaving no doubt as to what was intended, the assembly declared it to be the specific purpose of this new measure to prevent all communication between the slaves and certain slaves and people of color who have lately or may have hereafter be brought to these islands. Wiley would be even more explicit when he later recalled that in the year 1795, when the revolution, which is to remembered, is within view of some parts of this colony, rendered it necessary for us to be on our guard against the firebrands which were destroying that island. An act of assembly was passed to restrict the admission of Negroes from thence, numbers of whom were every day brought in by our privateers. So when you come to tell me, let's put a pause in there. So Wiley said that it would really seem to be just as prudent to keep black Frenchmen out of our colonies as to keep white Frenchmen out of England. So, when you tell me that we are not Asian and that that is not a part of who we are as Bahamians, you don't know what you're talking about. There has been movement of people of color between Haiti and the Bahamas for hundreds of years. Although these measures would meet with indifferent results, years later, for example, acting Governor Hunt would voice regret that far too many free people of color from Haiti were very impolitically suffered to remain here. Any thought that they reflected paranoid overreaction to the tumult in Saint-Domingue would be dispelled soon enough. In 1795, an alleged plot by French Negroes to burn down the town of Nassau and kill off all the whites was reportedly nipped in the bud. Still, it was enough of a scare to bring the non-white community under close surveillance and curtailment. A night patrol act was introduced, obliging all persons of color, on pain of arrest, to immediately retire from the streets once the town bell was sounded at 9 p.m. It was to guard against mischief by fire, murder, burglaries, robberies, breaches of the king's peace, riots, and other outrages and disorders, and all tumultuous meetings of Negroes and people of color. The limited deterrent value of such measures, however, was exposed when a conspiracy of far more menacing tendency was uncovered just 2 years later. I want to take a break, and then I'm going to explain what this uncovered conspiracy was and what it led to. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
BK Nassau and Pepsi want to bring you a fun day on us. Upgrade your favorite combo and get a chance to win great prizes like staycations at Atlantis or Baja Mar, powerboat adventure excursions, or a Blue Lagoon dolphin encounter. You can also win a relaxing day at Sandy Toes or a VIP movie experience at Fusion. Upgrade your combo at any of Burger King Nassau's 7 locations and enter to win online at bk242.com. Win fun days with Pepsi and Burger King, where taste is king.
You have a new text message from Scotia.
Scotiabank is adding text messaging to its communication channels to keep customers updated in quicker and safer ways. As of November 4th, Scotiabank will be using text messaging to provide notifications on the minimum payment required for your credit card and due dates. Customers may continue to access their credit card statements on Scotia Online or through our mobile banking app. Learn more by contacting customercare-bahamas at scotiabank.com or call 356-1697.
CG Atlantic Agents. How may I help you?
Yes, I want to know where to go to get third-party motor insurance.
Are you sitting down?
Yes.
Okay, could you put your feet up?
Okay.
Great. Just go to cgatlanticagents.com, where you can get a quote and buy your insurance online.
Relax. Now you can buy third-party motor insurance wherever and whenever you want. It's as easy as click, quote, buy. CG Atlantic Agents. Good like that. Nassau Insurance Brokers and Agents Limited. Trading as CG Atlantic Agents.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Okay, we're talking about... good afternoon and welcome back. Sorry, we're talking about events that occurred several hundred years ago, but would shape the Bahamas to this very day. So on the 27th of August, 1797, the commanding officer of the Volunteer Company of Engineers of the New Providence Militia advised Acting Governor Hunt that one of his subordinate officers, Joseph Montell, had just been informed by a Negro man of importance that the French Negroes, most of whom were captured by the privateers of this port and brought to this island in the commencement of the war, had entered into a conspiracy immediately to seize the ordnance stores, to put the sentries to death, and after providing themselves with a sufficient quantity of arms and ammunition, to attack Fort Charlotte and set fire to the east end of the town in order to divert the attention of the inhabitants. The acting governor received the report with grave alarm. It was widely known in the town, and thus presumably the conspirators to the conspirators as well, that Nassau's internal defenses were then in a wretched state. Yellow fever, a veritable plague on European troops, especially in the summer months, was visiting the 32nd Regiment with a vengeance. Of the 200 men in the regiment, not more than 40 were fit for duty. Hunt immediately instructed the commandant of the 32nd Regiment to double his guard and ordered the commanding officer of the militia to keep up constant patrols all night from one end of the town to the other. Hunt took further precaution of ordering two gunboats to take up strategic positions in the harbor to watch over the ordnance stores. The ordnance would be like the explosive cannonballs, gunpowder, muskets, rifles. While Hunt busily attended to these defensive preparations, Francis Montell was continuing to gather intelligence on the progress of the conspirators' plans from his Negro informant, whose name, incidentally, he had promised not to reveal, and apparently never did. Montell's informant, it appears, had been invited to join the conspiracy against the white people so that the insurgents could put themselves in the same situation the black people were in at Cape Francois. The informant had agreed to join, albeit solely for the purpose of eliciting information that he could promptly pass on to the authorities. Having thus pledged his support, he was invited to a planning session, only to learn upon his arrival at the appointed place that the meeting had already been put off to the following night, as only 20 plotters had shown up, instead of the 80 or so who had been expected. On the following day, later that night, having decided that the time had come to close in, Montell, in the company of Wild Goose and others, raided a house hired by a mulatto fiddler named Stephen in the western suburbs, where they surprised seven men and a woman sitting quietly around a candle-lit table. A search of the premises turned up a fuse for explosives, a musket, and a sword under the bed, and a powder horn as well. The occupants were thereupon put under arrest and bundled off to jail. The upshot of the ensuing investigation was that five persons were put on trial for the high crimes of treason and sedition, particulars being that the defendants, Baptiste Perpall, Baptiste Tucker, Police Edgecombe, Tom Bethune, and Tom Lockhart, had held unlawful assemblies aimed at the destruction of His Majesty's subjects, the white inhabitants of these islands. Now, there was a trial, and I'm not going to go through the entire trial, although it is pretty interesting, but needless to say that evidence was given, and Baptiste Perpall and Baptiste Tucker were sentenced to be hanged, and then their bodies were ordered to be cut down and hung in chains at the point commonly called Hog Island Point, to forewarn the living of the fate they may expect should they dare to try and act out against His Majesty. Now, let me explain what happened after the 1797 conspiracy was uncovered. The white population then lost its mind. A proto-police force would now be cobbled together to secure the observance of stricter curfews and vagrancy laws, with the power to break up all manner of disorderly colored assemblies, whether civil or religious. Churches, schools, the militia, Masonic lodges, places of entertainment, whole sectors of the economy, whole neighborhoods even, would now fall under the hammer of a considerably more insistent doctrine of racial separatism, while the vertical mobility of the free colored in the economy would be choked off and their civil disabilities reaffirmed and enlarged upon. By the beginning of the 19th century, there had emerged an almost obsessive interest in the planning of Bahamian society along precisely drawn racial lines, emphasizing white exclusivism as the organizing principle of the body politic. Nothing reveals this trajectory more clearly than a law enacted by the Bahamian legislature in 1802 entitled An Act to Suspend an Act to Ascertain Who Shall Not Be Deemed Mulattoes. The original law had been enacted as far back as 1756. It had decreed that all persons above 3 degrees removed from the Negro ancestor exclusive shall be deemed white, and were thus to be accorded all the privileges and immunities of white British subjects, provided they were of free condition and professed the Christian faith. Indeed, this was the standard legal test for whiteness in Jamaica and most other of the British colonial territories, except for Barbados, where the legislature seemed never to have provided a legal definition, leaving the matter to be regulated instead, according to the custom that anyone with a trace of Negroid ancestry was to be adjudged a Negro. The same position which, as we shall soon see, would officially obtain in the Bahamas as well between 1802 and 1824. The 1802 Act, at any rate, declared the 1756 Act suspended for 50 years. It pronounced a very effectual repeal as to the then existing generation by Attorney General Wiley. The 3 degrees removed test was jettisoned. In place, a new standard was adopted, namely that anyone who, in Wiley's words, had one drop of black blood in his veins was deemed to be a person of color. Thus, with a single stroke of a parliamentary pen, a goodly number of Bahamian residents who, on the eve of the suspending of the act, had retired to bed as white persons, awoke the next morning to discover that they had been translated into colored folk while they slept. Henceforth, only whites, as redefined, would be deemed worthy of admittance to the civil and political privileges. There would be no more of the old laxity. If exceptions were to be made in the future, it would be done solely on the basis of special dispensation by special act of the legislature for special persons who would have to come cap in hand under the watchful eye of a white community who jealously held on to its privileges. We're going to take a break for the news, and we'll be back on the other side, and we'll talk more about this.
FM, Nassau, Bahamas. This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good afternoon, Bahamas, and welcome back to The Revolution here on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. My name is Juan McCartney, so good to have you with us. So what we've been doing is we've been going through what happened after the Haitian Revolution, or during the Haitian Revolution anyway, the result of the beginning of the Haitian Revolution in the Bahamas, and the antecedent slave and colored people's rebellions throughout the colonies here in the Caribbean and even indeed in some parts of South America. Because of this fear among the white population, mainly the white loyalists who arrived from America in the 18th century, and you can see the timeline. So we're saying they started arriving in 1780, right? And it finished arriving essentially by 1789. And by 1802, they had stratified the Bahamas along racial lines that would exist for several hundred years. Slavery was still a thing, but there were free people of color. There were different categories of colored peoples who had some of the privileges that white people were afforded under law. So within about 20 years, we went from being a society that had a significant number of whites to a society that had a population of 5-1, black to white. And the ruling minority set about absolute control of the majority colored population. Within 20 years, in 1802, an act to suspend an act to ascertain who shall not be deemed mulatto was passed in the assembly. It's now our House of Assembly. The act to ascertain who shall not be deemed mulatto said that if you were three generations removed from your original African ancestor, then you were considered white. Okay? Other than that, mulatto, musty, octoroon, all this other crazy stuff. Okay? Now, when this act was passed, a lot of white families in what was then the Out Islands and New Providence said, we're out. Right? Went different places. Some of them went back to Britain. Some of them went back to America and other places. And I'm going to do two more things. I want to relate two more things, and then I'm happy to discuss all this stuff with you. I want to relate to you why we have such racial distrust in our society. Still, mainly among people of color in this country. I want to explain to you that this was handed to you. This was programmed for you. It's not something that we innately came up with. These are the vestiges of slavery and colonialism. How we treat each other to this very day. Don't tell me you don't see it. We joke a lot about light skin privilege on this show, right? I'm wondering if I can get like better loans and all this. We have lighter skinned people who discriminate against black skinned people, darker skinned people. We have darker skinned people who are distrustful of lighter skinned people and think that they're wielding their skin color, their hair texture as some sort of weapon in order to keep them down and advance them. When really, your skin color, your hair texture, is only the circumstance of your birth. Unless you bleach and bedazzle, you know what I'm saying. So white people lost their mind again and fled, right? A lot of them. By 1803, Governor Halkett would advise Hobart that a most serious and alarming pitch toward the spirit of emigration has taken place in this colony. all because whites, in his view, felt threatened by the large number of free blacks. It will sound odd in your ear when I add that in New Providence, too many of our blacks have obtained their freedom. And the most disproportionate number of black troops, who, in his considered opinion, were not to be trusted. They will, when opportunities offer, inevitably join their fellows. What recently happened at Cape Francois, with a body of them employed and trusted by General Rochambeau, will be repeated by such troops whenever similar opportunities or situations arise. Okay? So the white people are like, you know what? There's 20 black people here who are free, right? If they're slaves, that's one thing. The free set, the mulattoes, they may encourage the slaves to rebel, right? If the slaves rebel, the free set, they're going to join up with the slaves. They have guns, right? Many of them. All right. So, because of Halkett's concern over the disproportionate number of black troops, acting Governor Hobart said there were no more black troops permitted to land. All right. He said, Halkett told Hobart that while the black troops are disembarking on one side of the island, the peaceable white inhabitants will be leaving on the other. Okay? Let's go through some of the... There's a lot more of this stuff, too, and it talks about how this stuff was happening in Jamaica, Barbados, other colonies, all because of one revolution in Haiti. So, for instance, by law, if you were a man of color, you could not testify against a white man. There was a case, Davis alias Suti, Mercier, and LaRue, that had a man named William Fox from Long Island as the first witness of the prosecution. And the very first objection of the trial was that Fox was a man of color from Long Island, and therefore he could not testify. So they had a trial within a trial. All right? The prosecution had to bring witnesses on behalf of Fox to say that Fox was considered a white man, and even Davis, who was on trial himself, perhaps might not be a white man, so the whole point would be moot, okay? Eventually, Fox was acknowledged and received as a white man and allowed to testify at trial. That's how deep it went, okay? As a result of these laws, these traditions that were passed, the barriers that separated brown from black, because that was a thing, it now devolved into a hierarchy of color. Differentiation between, McQueenie writes, differentiation between Negroes and mulattoes, or black and colored, or black and brown, was, after all, a staple of everyday life. Being employed without fail in the newspapers, church and public register, deeds of title and other records, and it can hardly be doubted in casual conversation as well. The laws of the period are especially noteworthy in this regard, invariably differentiating between blacks or Negroes and mulattoes, but then discriminating against both subgroups in precisely the same way, as if to make the distinction pointless. This pervasive use of differentiating terminology could only have exacerbated whatever pre-existing tendencies there may have been among free people of color to discriminate amongst themselves on the basis of complexional variations and or varying degrees of remoteness from a common African heritage. With no small amount of anxiety either, one particularly striking example of self-conscious differentiation being provided in the 1830s when a certain Miss Anne Davis, having been described in a local newspaper as a free black, would feel compelled to request an immediate correction to the effect that she was not a free black, but rather free colored. As between white and non-white, however, racial consciousness was to become even more pronounced in the second decade of the 19th century. Indeed, in the wake of further demographic changes, attendant social strains and severely depressed economic conditions, antagonism toward the entire free colored class would increase more notably. All right? Now, this goes on to talk about fears about liberated Africans arriving in the Bahamas, but what I want to also get to, right? So racism, colorism, and religion. Now, whoever's out there, tell me, what is the largest religious denomination in the Bahamas? Anyone know? You know, Arlington? What is the largest religious denomination in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas? It is the Christian Baptist Church. Why do you think that is? It is because the Methodists and the Baptists would minister and send missions to help black people and to try to bring black people to Jesus when the other established denominations, the Anglican Church and the Catholic Church, was not on that run. Here's what happened that may help many of you to understand why most black Bahamians, not all, of course, there's many variations, but there's a plurality of black Bahamians who are Baptists. I'm not saying there are no white Baptists, I'm just saying, all right? So the assembly, again, controlled by loyalists, again, fearing the ascendancy of the black population, started being more vigilant. They started religious persecution of the Methodists and the Baptists in 1816 for their activities among the slave class and free people of color. Expressing itself determined to bring Methodist missionaries and other dissenting preachers within these islands under strict licensing control, the Bahamian legislature, much as its counterparts in Jamaica and Barbados had already done, enacted a law which, with an accompanying amendment to the Police Act, fell just short of suppressing the Methodist and Baptist denominations altogether. Posturing itself as a champion of ecclesiastical orthodoxy, the assembly, in tones righteous and solemn, pronounced quote-unquote real religion, a euphemism for the Anglicans and Presbyterians, to be under assault from uneducated, illiterate, and ignorant persons and enthusiasts whose peculiar worshiping habits saw them holding services for large numbers of colored people and Negroes of free condition and slaves assembled together in houses, Negro houses, huts, and the yard thereunto belonging, and also upon the highways within these islands. But for all the legislators' pretended concern over these evangelizing novelties, their true purpose was revealed by the same act to have a decidedly more secular bent. As much was made plain when the act came to set out the oath required of Baptist and Methodist preachers as a condition for receiving a preaching license. Other conditions will include a bond in the crippling sum of £400 with two sureties. All right, so £400 in 1816. All right, well, think about that one. The Baptist and Methodist preachers were required to swear, "I do solemnly swear that I will not inculcate or disseminate in these islands any doctrine or opinion unfriendly to the system of the government established therein, or inconsistent with the duty which slaves owe to their masters, so help me God." The suspicion so implicit in that oath that Methodist and Baptist ministers were lacing their sermons with politically subversive ideas would find explicit expression in an amendment to the Police Act passed at the same time. In this particular instance, the objective was the complete suppression of nocturnal religious services. Any gathering of persons of color, in even moderate numbers, was reason enough for suspicion when it came to assemblies under cover of darkness. Something sinister simply had to be afoot. The practice used by the Methodists and other dissenting sectaries in offering up public prayers, preaching, exhorting, and singing psalms at all hours of the night is but too well calculated to furnish a cloak for the most dangerous purpose and is frequently productive of evil consequences to the inhabitants of these islands generally, and particularly to the free people of color and the slaves therein. With these fears in mind, the Police Amendment Act, doubtless to the delight of many an Anglican and Presbyterian cleric, pronounced it a criminal offense, punishable by fine and imprisonment, for anyone to preach or use public worship in any place, chapel, or other meeting house within these islands earlier in the morning than the rising of the sun, or later in the evening than the setting of the sun. In giving firsthand witness to the enforcement of these new laws, a Methodist missionary who had been sent out from England would reflect at the time on how cruelly ironic it was that while drunkards, dancers, card players, gamblers, etc., are protected in their dissipation and sin, the peaceable, unoffending people of God are not permitted to worship God in the very same hours. All right? Now, there's more, okay? But I'm gonna leave it there, and we could talk more about it. But this shows you how the racial divide, like baked in white distrust of free colored and black people, and it redefined the history of the Bahamas to this day. I say this to say to all of you that now understanding this, maybe you can understand better where we are, because a lot of this has inextricably led us to the place we are today. We don't understand why we're separated by denomination when we're all Christians. Not all of us. We don't understand why we're so separated by class and color. Not all of us. As we begin to better understand these things, we can better work at correcting these historical wrongs. And also, you can better understand why I think it's despicable that we still have the Queen as our head of state. Because her forebears set all this in motion, and yet we celebrate them today. Let's take a break. We'll be back. You can call me, you can text me, whatever you'd like.
Throughout our lifetime, we must all make decisions. No matter how we choose, the right one just needs to be made. Like having J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers as your insurance partner. We've been serving the Bahamas for over 100 years. Whether you need home, motor, marine, or commercial insurance, make the right decision. Call 397-2100 or visit jsjohnson.com.
You have a new text message from Scotia.
Scotiabank is adding text messaging to its communication channels to keep customers updated in quicker and safer ways. As of November 4th, Scotiabank will be using text messaging to provide notifications on the minimum payment required for your credit card and due dates. Customers may continue to access their credit card statements on Scotia Online or through our mobile banking app. Learn more by contacting customercare-bahamas at scotiabank.com or call 356-1697.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to The Revolution here on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. My name is Juan McCartney, so good to have you with us. As I said, we weren't going to talk about current affairs today insofar as the issues of the day, but I hope you do understand how what we went through, if you've heard the majority of it, actually informs the state that we are in today. 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, 4224796 is the text line. Good afternoon. Welcome to The Revolution. Hello, good afternoon. Are you there?
Good afternoon.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm fine, Mr. McCartney. How are you?
I'm great. How's it going?
Well, I'm not the best, but
no?
This is very fascinating, your show today.
Thank you.
And I called to ask if I can purchase a copy. I missed the first 5-10 minutes of your show.
Of the show?
But I think it is so educational, and I only wish I had learned most of this, most of the things you said so far in school, instead of all of the British history, the War of the Roses, and the problems between Ireland and England and the uniting of Scotland with England and all of the other stuff
that are
not as important. It's good to know, but not as important as knowing more West Indian and more Bahamian history.
Absolutely.
And why some Bahamians resented being called West Indians.
I understand.
I remember a speech I gave at St. Agnes Church some years ago saying that I know who I am. I know why. And I've been trying to find out why I am almost all of my adult life.
Right.
That's the way I started. And then I went on to say, I am an Anglican. I try my very best to be a Christian. I am a West Indian. A Caribbean man. And boy, saying West Indian, that was something else. But people forgot when we wrote letters, we put as our return address, or when I was off in school in the mid-60s, that we would say Nassau Bahamas, BWI for British West Indies. I would like to purchase a copy of this show if I can. I would like my children and grandchildren to learn more.
Yeah, you can have a copy for free. I'll also send you the document.
Oh, well, please. Please, I'll try and get it next week if that's possible.
Sure, just send your email. Actually, Arlington, you want it via email or you want to?
Well, email will do.
Okay, Arlington, take his email for me, please. Thanks so much for calling. Let's take the next call. Good afternoon. Welcome to The Revolution.
A godly day, this is Doc Inouye.
Hey, what's happening?
One.
Yo.
I also would like to have a copy. I was occupied by Archer's funeral, so I missed a portion of, you know, the first portion of your show also, but it's very educational, the portion of which I've heard, right?
Right.
But what I want to ask you, right? Touches, like touch houses. Where did that start? Who started those in the Bahamas?
You know, I'm not sure. You'd have to ask a historian or an anthropologist.
Okay. Now, how could I get a copy of the CD?
Well, it's actually, by tomorrow, the show will be uploaded on YouTube. If you want a CD, you got to actually pay for the CD.
That's no problem.
If I can email it to you, I'll email it to you. Well, just you can call the station at, or you can call the front desk and make the request. It's 302-2300.
Okay.
2300, yeah.
300. Yeah. I appreciate it. I would appreciate it if you put that on, if you have that show on tomorrow, the rest of it, you know? And also, Juan, if you could wake and find out how touch houses got in the Bahamas, how Fway started them.
I'll try.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Let's go to the phone call. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Hey, a pleasant good afternoon. What are you doing?
Hey, I'm good, Anton. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. Juan.
Yes?
How can I get a copy of that show, please?
It's by tomorrow. It'll be on YouTube. But you have my digit. You can.
I'm kidding.
Oh, I know, right? Everyone want a copy? That's like the request line.
Look, I want to ask you. What are you reading from?
It's a paper called "Not Far from the Madding Crowd," by Sean McQueenie.
Oh, by Sean McQueenie. Okay, excellent.
Yes.
Excellent news.
It was published in the Journal of Haitian Studies and the Bahamas Historical Journal as well about 20 years ago.
Right, I was just about to ask for the time frame, 20 years ago. Interesting read from one of our bright scholars, our bright minds in the country.
Absolutely.
But one, you know, when you went to break after going through that bit of information, I found myself smiling at your statement where you identified these are some of the challenges that bring separation, you know, with church and state and, you know, social development and classism and that kind of stuff, right? Because
right.
When you look at the fact that the great United States of America won, right, has broken away from the British Empire, right, through blood, sweat, and tears, right? Unlike us, who we only have internal governance, but we don't have full self-internal governance, right?
Mm-hmm.
We never went back for that, according to the original architects of our Constitution. And so we have a ways to go. But looking at the United States, who's 300-plus years old, one, and when you look at their last president during the last term in office, and you see that this is the most powerful nation in the world, they have some of the most wealthiest African-American, as they call it, black, as we call it, persons in the world residing in the United States of America, some of the most powerful athletes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And even those persons who are of those 9 and 10 and, you know, decimal figure values, they still have a problem with racism in their country.
Yeah, absolutely. And
they still have problems, Juan, as wealthy as they are. They are still profiled, and they still have issues in what they call white America, right?
Yes.
And so, one, it only goes to show that we in this country, we haven't begun to tip the scales of the depth of the problem of race and classism and other isms in this country. We haven't begun to tip the scales. But one thing is certain. When you look at our history, and you look at how wealth was attained in this country by when you look at those who have what they call the old money. And you know what I mean when I say old money.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The people of original wealth in our country who are behemoths. And look at how they went about attaining wealth for the most part. And you look at how they are passed off in this day and time as the the higher or the upper echelon of society, and everything else is a whitewash. It tells you one, we have a serious problem in our country that was not addressed in the pending era and no other prime minister's era since pending. It was just allowed to go along as though it never happened. It was never addressed. It was never raised. And every time you seek to have the hard conversations in the public domain regarding all of it, you either label as a racist or you label as hating one race or, you know, you label as being jealous or envious of people's wealth and all that kind of garbage that seeks to whitewash the reality. But one day, one, hopefully, whether it be through your show sparking that level of debate, we will have real discussions and we will come up with real solutions in our country. But in the meantime, one, we would have gotten majority rule in this country, but we never got economic majority rule in this country. And that's a phrase that I coined almost 20 years ago. We never got economic majority rule in this country, one. And okay, we need to shift the way we do things in this country. We need to shift the way we do business in this country. We need to shift the way we look at each other in particular in this country. Because, one, when you look at the social classes in the country, certain classes don't mix with other classes. You may have one or two of a certain class or color in the country that's allowed in the other environments, but in common, hell no, it's not a practice. It's not a common practice. And so right, it's deeply rooted in this country. Thank you for the opportunity. Continue your voice, my brother.
Thanks, Anton. Let's take one more call. All right. Good afternoon.
Yeah, Mr. McCartney, Frank Carter again.
Hi.
One of the points I wanted to make before hanging off was I now better understand why the Anglican Church, St. Mary the Virgin Anglican Church on Virginia Street, was a gift from the British government after emancipation for the mulattoes to worship. And a year later, St. Agnes Anglican Church, which we sometimes call the Cathedral of the South, was given for the people of Bain and Grandstand to worship, for the blacks or the coloreds. So even in the Anglican Church, we had the line drawn. Church for whites, a church for the mulattoes, and a church for the blacks or coloreds. And it's quite interesting.
But yeah, absolutely.
That also came to mind from some of your readings this morning, and I must congratulate you. And I also congratulate the author, Ms.
McSweeney.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot. And continue to make your contributions, notwithstanding the criticisms you may get or receive. But it's very educational. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Well, listen, to Anton, to one of Anton's points, the fact that, and to Frank Carter's point, the fact that this isn't widespread knowledge, that we don't understand our true history in this country, all of us, white, black, octoroon, all that, mulatto, that's our fault. We've been from under direct British rule for, 60 years? Certainly, if you want to trace it back from majority rule, it's 50. It's only our fault that we don't teach ourselves about who we are and where we came from. And only we can correct it. We're going to take a break and be back. We'll deal with some text messages, etc. Stay tuned.
Forcing you to use technology to bank the way they want you to? Your convenience is important. So no matter what your banking needs, Commonwealth Bank's friendly staff are always available in branch for that personal one-on-one service. But when you choose technology, our online and mobile banking app offers you state-of-the-art functionality. The choice is yours. Commonwealth Bank. Bank the way you want.
At Wendy's, our food is made to make you crave. Crave our pretzel BLT burger or Chipotle crunch for only $5 each. Our Chipotle crunch chicken sandwich is covered in crispy jalapenos, Chipotle aioli, cheddar cheese sauce, and much more. Or bite into our pretzel BLT with fresh beef, cheddar cheese sauce, applewood smoked bacon, and smoky honey mustard sauce on a pretzel bun. Restrictions apply. Eat and earn reward members. Remember to scan or swipe to earn points. Wendy's, different inside and out.
CG Atlantic Agents, how may I help you?
Yes, I want to know where to go to get third-party motor insurance.
Are you sitting down?
Yes.
Okay, could you put your feet up?
Okay.
Great. Just go to cgatlanticagents.com, where you can get a quote and buy your insurance online.
Relax. Now you can buy third-party motor insurance wherever and whenever you want. It's as easy as click, quote, buy. CG Atlantic Agents. Good like that. Nassau Insurance Brokers and Agents Limited. Trading as CG Atlantic Agents.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to The Revolution here on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. We're talking some history and how the vestiges of slavery, colonial rule linger to this day. And we can have conversations about it without castigating anyone who is alive today. Like when I say I find it despicable that the Queen is our head of state, it's not because Elizabeth did anything particularly to the Bahamas, it's because of the institution she represents. You should be mindful of what you elevate in your society in terms of symbolism, in terms of institutions. Okay? It says, Sean McQueenie, isn't he a finance man, or am I mixing him up? Yeah, Sean McQueenie's a former attorney general. I believe he's currently the managing partner of Graham Thompson and Co. And he's a national treasure, in my opinion. We got time for a call, and then we'll take do text messages. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Revolution.
Yeah, sorry. How you doing today, Juan?
I'm fine. How are you?
How you doing today?
I'm good. How's it going?
All right. This is a very interesting topic. I heard of very important quote at one time, and it says that most of these antiquated laws that are still on our books was actually there to actually govern a colony, not to build a nation.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, the thing about it is that this is pretty much, I think a lot of this, these laws are kind of bastardized, for the lack of another word. And black political leaders are actually using them to their advantage. And that's why a lot of the rules are, or the regulations aren't changed yet. Take my point. One point is there's no teeth in any law that holds a politician accountable to stuff that they do untoward or in convention to their office. And that's why it's so difficult to really prosecute them in the thing, because none of the two leading parties they're not going to pass a law that they can't live with themselves after they're out of office.
I do understand your second point, but to the first point, we have laws that deal with abuse of office, of public office in the Bahamas, absolutely. And politicians
are
held...
There's no teeth to it, and so they just do this dance around that blame and shame game, and nothing else happens after that.
Right, and doesn't go any farther. Agreed.
Yeah, it's sad, and so if there's no teeth to it, then who's to stop the politicians from doing it over and over and over again?
Absolutely, my brother. Now, let me go through some of the text messages. I can't deal with any more calls, April. I got a lot of text messages to have been from the beginning of the show. So let me deal with this. It says it's not a very distant past. I mean, you know, 200 years is relatively a short time along the expanse of history, but, you know, technologically we've come a long way in 200 years. It says, good day, Juan. Please state for your avid listeners, this is a live show. Says, what would your white listeners prefer to talk about? White privilege? No, I think they too would find this interesting. It says, no, not 1776. Yeah, the War of American Independence. It ended in 1784. England sent my grandfather to Exuma, George Brennan, and Lord Rolle to Exuma. Yep. Mm-hmm. Good afternoon, McCartney. Moving forward, we also need to know these terms are purely sociological, and the color code of races has no basis or standing in biological or genetic science and is pseudoscience. That's absolutely right. This says, great show day one. As usual, I think today's show is going to get someone punched in the face because someone is going to pick up on these racist words and use it. I'm one of those people. I have dabs on the usage of the word musties. No one's going to get punched in the face because of my show. Please, thanks for the show, Juan. Please let people know that whites made levels to blackness. I believe the closest to white one could be was 1/8 and you were octoroon. I do think this is where the slur coon may have come from. No, you could be closer to white than that. Octoroon was near the bottom of the scale away from whiteness. This says, we're not Haiti or Haitians, we're Bahamians, and our country, as of 1973, is called the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. We have to stop trying to marry the two. We are being constantly bombarded with the problems of Haiti. All of the country and our immigration laws, as a sovereign country, continue to be violated. This is the problem that citizens are disgusted by, when the ordinary tax-paying legal citizens has to contend with the expenses of that nation via its illegal immigrants to our land, bottom line. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say illegal immigration from Haiti is not a problem. I'm just going to say that perhaps this term, true Bahamian, indigenous Bahamian, is not as solid as you think. This is not the mulatto fiddler. Yeah, the mulatto, yeah. He rented a house from a mulatto fiddler. It says, I'm a Kunky Joe whose family can be traced back to the Eleutheran adventurers. On the other side, I can trace back the Eldons to a Reed Elding, who was the first black governor in the Bahamas in the 1690s, born on a slave plantation in Barbados, and somehow grew up to marry an aristocrat's daughter, and he came here and caused all kind of ruckus with the pirates as the governor. Our country's history is rich, and you find out some pretty interesting things. I'm glad you're doing this show. These are the stories you don't hear about, and they're disturbing yet captivating at the same time. Absolutely. And you have a lot of whites in the Bahamas who fought tooth and nail to end slavery and to end racial injustice. And we're of great benefit to blacks. Good day. Where'd you find this valuable info you're going through today? We need to read it also. As I said, it's called Far From the Madding Crowd by Sean McQueenie. And you could just put that in Google and it'll pop up. Should pop up. This says, Baptist is the largest, exactly. This asked me to repeat the source material, I just did. It says, hello, Juan, this show is one for the record books, a breath of fresh air, also very educational. Hope you can do more shows like this. I have actually a ton of, well, let me not say I, right? There's an entire university across the street here that's been documenting research since the 70s about the Bahamas, and they've shared this research with universities around the world. There are universities around the world that have come here and documented stuff. I can do an entire show on the different skin color variations of the Bahamas and trace their roots. But I have a lot of I've accessed a lot of information on a lot of other interesting topics. It says, be careful, Juan. Traditionally Catholic / Anglicans and Methodists are usually registered members of their denominational churches. Conversely, majority of the Baptist worshipers are not registered to their churches, even though they may worship regularly. I understand that, but my information on that comes from the Department of Statistics on people who consider themselves a particular denomination and religion. Okay, it's asking for the name of the document. I said it. It says, great show, Juan. I wish more shows like this occurred. You and Dr. Chris Curry are taken very seriously because when it comes to this subject and just in general, you're both fair, objective, and just speak plain facts. I'd like to hear Dr. Curry's opinion of this in addition to how it relates to the state of where we are today. I'd like to hear his opinion too. And Dr. Chris Curry is like multiple levels above me on this, right? So I'm into like the D League, right? And he's playing, like, you know, on TV. This says, the history is interesting and nice as a curiosity, but it's way beyond time to move on from all this now. Slavery is something that was practiced basically everywhere and is still practiced in Africa today, and literally nobody cares. Nobody cares? You sure about that? The Queen is recognized because our language, our history, and our entire system of governance is derived from the British. Getting butthurt about stuff that happened centuries ago before you were born and getting rid of the Queen isn't going to change what happened in the past. No, it won't change what happened in the past because you cannot change what happened in the past. The entire concept doesn't make any sense. However, what you can do is chart your future forward without recognizing that which was detrimental to your past. It says, good afternoon, Juan. Very enlightening and sobering sharing today. Yep, you asked for the source of the documents. I read the source. That's when asking for the source of documents. This says, black people deserve reparations in the Bahamas. It's interesting. I was reading research earlier this year. There was an actual study done tracing the doling out of reparations money to slave owners in the Bahamas, as opposed to what slaves were promised but never got. It says, good topic, Juan. You know, some deep part of my hexadecaroon self still gets scared when I hear the Fox Hill day drums at 5 a.m. in the rain from a distance. Good day, Juan. Would it be possible for you to teach Anton how to align his chakras so he can have something to do other than call talk shows, please? Also, can you let him know that he could have some of those monologues inside his head? Thanks. Oh, my. Leave that time alone. This is good day one. Good show today. Informative and needed. This says, one, now you understand why Sir Durward Knowles was not allowed to join the Royal Bahamian Sailing Club. He was an original white Bahamian. Yep. It says, dear comrade, the story you told is the same all over the planet with some small differences like ethnicity, wealth, and religion. That's why I encourage people to watch TV shows like Britannia. I read more nonfiction books by the age of 10 than most people read in their lifetime. Yeah, good. Sorry I couldn't get to all your text messages. Some very interesting ones. You know, think through these things. We'll be back, Lord willing, tomorrow. You guys take care out there, Bahamas.
The Revolution with Juan McCartney is sponsored by J.S. Johnson, Burger King, Commonwealth Bank, Wendy's, Ron's Electric Motors, Scotiabank, CG Atlantic, Digital Transformation Unit, and Bahamas Check Services.